live from beautiful Norwalk, Connecticut. It is Wednesday, August 7th. We got a great show for you today. We got Neil Lynch tuning in from the Hoboken studio. Neil, how you doing, brother?
Doing better than average this week.
Always better than average. And filling in for Tony D, the first guest producer spot. This just shows you, if you're a loyal fan of the show, we'll add you on. That's how Neil got on board. Neil was a faithful listener. He was a good caller. When their position opened up, Neil jumped on board. And right now, Tony D's out again. He's playing softball. God bless him. So we brought on the one, the only, Matt from Norwalk, Matt Scully. Matty, are you excited to be in studio, my dude?
I am very excited, and I want to thank you, Mike, for allowing me to buy you a turkey sandwich. So it's good to be the guest producer tonight, and I'm looking forward to it.
All right, well, there you have it. We've got a lot to get to. We already got some callers on hold, which I'm excited about. So we are going to try to get to a bunch of callers. We should have a guest, pretty big-time guest, lined up for the 9 o'clock hour. So stay tuned for that. I don't want to tell you who it is, because if you're listening via podcast, you're just going to fast-forward it to them. And we got a lot to get to. We got a lot of good stuff. We got a great top 10 tonight, football-related top 10. But we got to start out with the biogenesis stuff. I mean, we've been going back and forth about this since the story broke. I guess it was probably in February. That some suspensions were coming down and all of that. So finally they all came down. The doomsday, Monday, August 5th, came down. Everybody accepted their suspensions. All of them 50-game suspensions other than the Braun suspension, which came a few weeks ago, except for A-Rod, 211 games. We've been saying it. We don't have to be a dead horse at this point. We've been saying it would be crazy for him not to fight it at this point, for him to just give up 2 years. He's got nothing to lose. His legacy's tarnished. He's got nothing to lose. Worst case scenario, the worst is 211 games. It's not going to go up from that. So he's got to fight it. So we knew that was going to happen, Matty. So, Neil, obviously there's not a lot of surprises because we knew about Everett Cabrera. We knew about Nelson Cruz. We knew about Johnny Peralta. But the one surprise, and maybe I just was not up to speed on this, Jordani Valdespin. Neil, you upset, excited?
I have zero idea. And the fact that, maybe that had something to do with his demotion, the fact that he was flying off the cuff of the coach was, part of it. But the fact that maybe they had some suspicion that he was on this stuff and they just didn't want him around the clubhouse when he was suspended.
Well, I think that's a good point. I mean, look, I think Major League Baseball was up front with all these teams. I think they, if they're investigating somebody, I think Major League Baseball, as a courtesy, reaches out to the team and say, hey, we got some pretty good evidence on a guy. I don't think that any of these teams were blindsided, and that's not just because of what was leaked. I think it was. I think Major League Baseball, as a rule, would reach out to them. So I'm sure they knew about it. And for the Mets, I think they're doing backflips because now, he kind of was for a while a little bit of a fan favorite because of his late inning heroics off the bench. And I know from, I've talked about on the show, I've had conversations with front office people with the Mets who couldn't stand the guy.
Yeah.
And so for them to be able to now have an out and say, this guy's done. He's never going to play in a Mets uniform again. He didn't have a position as it was. He was hitting under 200 when he got an opportunity as a starter.
Yeah.
Good riddance. I don't know if you'll ever see this guy in the major league again.
Well, I something about that needs to be said as well is that one of the Yankees that was suspended was Fernando
F. Martin.
Yeah, Fernando Martinez, those guys were teammates, right, a couple of years ago?
I would assume so, yeah. I mean,
I wonder if that had anything to do. I mean, when these guys started the investigation or when these guys failed the test, it wasn't just this season. It was something that happened, either last season or beyond that. So I'm wondering if that was one of the reasons that F. Martin was gone, and then when they did the digging, they found this on Jordani. I don't know. I don't know. That's the problem with this whole thing, that it just it sort of grazed the cloud a little bit. You don't know who's doing what, when, how, and that's just sort of the big mystery. And when you look at this whole entire thing from 10,000 square feet or 10,000 feet away, that's the thing that's really sad, is just that everyone's under this cloud of suspicion.
Oh, yeah, and we talk about Chris Davis. If you do want to call in and talk anything biogenesis-related or anything in the sports world, the number to call, as always, 347-637-2306. We are going to go out to line one and take a call. You are on with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Good evening. Who's this? Going one. No one twice.
He's obviously on.
I don't know. We don't have time for that. We got a busy packed show. Whoever was just calling out of line one, unfortunately, you had your opportunity, brother, and you missed it. So we put you back on mute. So Neil, all these guys that come out, and now we know who's calling in. We will go back to that caller. They put their name up on the board. Now, all these guys that came out, Ben, are you able to see this, Neil? Who's calling
in?
Yeah,
I just changed it. I want to make sure everyone knows who that number is. It's Lene Kukua on line one.
All right, we got to go out to Lene Kukua. If Lene is there, I would guess probably not. Lene, are you with us? Lene Kukua. As only Lene could say. But let's get back to it. So, Neil, you know, these 50-game suspensions that got handed down, you know, there's a couple of guys going into free agency. We saw what happened with Melky, where it didn't affect him. He signed the, you know, 2-year, I think, $16 million deal with Toronto.
Whoa. You can't say that didn't affect him. I mean, 2 years for $16 million with the numbers that he was putting up?
Well, it was one season, though. He kind of was a flash in the pan type guy.
That's all you need. Look at this Matt Harvey.
Well, no.
That's
a little bit different. Mel Cabrera was a fourth or fifth outfielder for his whole career, and then all of a sudden put it all together.
He was the all-star MVP.
Now, my question is, a guy like Nelson Cruz.
Yep.
Now, Nelson Cruz is a guy who has always had crazy potential, never could stay healthy. You could see why he would take performance enhancing drugs, because his biggest bugaboo was he always had hamstring issues, problems with his legs, problems, and he could never give you 155, 160 games. Finally, he's putting it all together. Here's a guy, Neil. We got some holes in the outfield at Citi Field. I mean, is that a guy? I mean, he is going to be discounted. Is that a guy you want the Mets to go out and get with this cloud hanging over him? A Nelson Cruz.
I understand why you're asking me this question. It's because I was a proponent of Nelson Cruz over Andre Ethier a couple weeks ago. And, you know, truth be told, it's I didn't realize that he was that closely tied to Biogenesis. And now that he has been, given his age and given the fact that he's probably not going to be on the stuff anymore. And I think that's what the Mets are trying to do. They're trying to clean house and they're trying to wave away the clouds that have been plaguing them for the past several years. They're trying to get a clean start, and I think, you know, sending Valdez Bean down was a good step, and to bring more of that into the clubhouse, and you know, they need more Eric Youngs, they need more Juan Lagares. You know, hopefully there's no dirt on those two, but those two guys have stepped up big time with their play, with their enthusiasm, their crowd favorites, and they're positive guys, and I think they need more of that. More so than they do a guy like Nelson Cruz, who's had good numbers, but who knows how much of that we can attribute to the juice.
Well, Neil, when you look at some of the Mets signings, like the major signings, like the free agents. I mean, besides Beltran, you know, they took some chance on some very questionable characters, and even a clean cut character like a Jason Bay. I mean, who couldn't arguably be one of the top 10 worst signings of all time. You know, K-Rod, Johan Santana. I mean, you look at, even if you go back 10 years, you look at a Roberto Alomar or a Jeremy Burnitz. The testing the market really hasn't worked out for them.
Yeah, we also have to realize that Sandy Alderson is in the power position now. It's not Omar Minaya anymore. It's not Steve Phillips. I think Sandy Alderson has a decent head on his shoulders. The jury's still out on Terry Collins, but I think there's a different mentality in Queens. I think they're more all about the homegrown talent and fostering that talent and bringing them up and not trading them away for these names, these big marquee names that end up being spelling trouble and doom for the ball club. So I don't think you're going to see a lot of that. And that's why, they were talking about it on Boomer and Carton the other day, there are a lot of people saying that the Mets might have some spending money to throw around in the offseason to get a free agent. I don't know if that's the route to go. Like you said, there has been a checkered past. But to me, and I'm going to make an analogy to my – I'm going to bring in my other favorite team, the New York Football Giants. They were talking about – I guess it was Ernie Accorsi, their former GM. He put out a book, and he was saying that, and this relates to – not to get off on a tangent, but this relates to the – Riley Cooper N-bomb situation and how it was paralleled with Kerry Collins dropping the N-bomb when he was with the Panthers in 97. And he was explaining why Ernie, of course, was explaining why he brought in Kerry Collins, knowing that the guy has an alcohol problem. He's had this N-bomb situation that went off. Why did Ernie, of course, bring him in? He said because at one point he was a good kid. And I know that sounds too simple. I'm really, maybe watering down the situation. But he said he was a good kid at one point, and they thought they could bring out the good kid in him again. And that's why you don't see the Giants going out. And they do their research, and they don't draft a lot of guys or bring in a lot of free agents that have a bad past, that where they were always a bad kid, a bad seed from day one. You're going to have your Plaxico Burreses who make a mistake. You're going to have your Michael Bolles who did what he did. They're going to be a couple bad apples. But the fact is, I think Alderson has that same mentality where it's like, we got to do our research and our homework on these guys and make sure that they at one point or another, they've got that goodness to them like Eric Young does.
Well, here's my last point about Nelson Cruz. I mean, if history is any indicator, you look at what Mel Kiper did. And like, Matt said, I'm saying he signed a big deal with 2 years, $16 million. For me, a guy with a cloud hanging over his head who only produced when he was on steroids to get that kind of money seems like a lot of money. That being said, the bar is going to be that maybe these guys will get decent-sized annual contracts, but you don't have to lock them up long-term. Don't you think, if you could get Nelson Cruz on a 2 or 3 year deal, he's in his late 20s, I believe, get him on a 2 or 3 year deal, even if it's 10 per or more, that's worth the risk, and you're not sitting there saying we're never going to get out from under this contract. If you can get him for 2 years, 25, 2 years, 24, like an Adam Dunn type deal like he signed in Washington, to me that's because, look, Lagares has been a nice story. He's a great defensive player. When he first came up, he looked completely lost at the plate. Now he's coming up with big hits. He's electric. Eric Young, same thing. I mean, he's the guy, never really found a home when he was out in Colorado as a full-time player, whether at second base or in the outfield. And he's been nice. But you're not going to win a World Series. I don't care how good your pitchers are with those two guys in the outfield and not a bat who can give you some pop. And you look at the free agent core, coming in for next year. You got guys like Shin-Soo Choo, who I really like, but I can't imagine the Reds not matching whatever offer anybody else has, and I can't imagine there being a differentiator where money being equal, somebody's going to want, like, he's going to want to come play in Queens. You got guys like Curtis Granderson, all pop. Is he just a result of that field that he's playing on? A guy's going to hit 230. And hit 40 home runs, but at one of the most hitter-friendly ballparks around. So it's not like they're like Hunter Pence we talked about. I mean, it's not like there's guys out there that are slam dunk. And you do need to add somebody. I agree with you. You don't want to just throw crazy money around. But they are going to need to add somebody. And why not Nelson Cruz if the price is what we're talking about? If the price is somebody still willing to give him 5 for $80, then, yeah, don't take the risk. But if it's a two-year deal, maybe incentive-laden, and that's what the market is for a guy like him, I think it's worth it, dude. I really do. And I'm curious. I mean, the two guys that are going to free agency are him and Johnny Peralta. The Mets are needed for a shortstop, too. If you can get Johnny Peralta cheap, are you going to, take a chance? I think the Mets are at that point. You still got to take those kind of chances because they don't have another shortstop down there that could do that.
I mean, you're willing to give up on Ruben Tejada and Quintanilla that quickly?
Well, Quintanilla is 31. And he's never made. I mean, Quintanilla is a great defensive shortstop, but he's a light hitting shortstop. He's a journeyman utility infielder. I don't mind having him on the roster, but I think what Johnny Peralta can give you offensively is light years ahead of what he can give you. And Ruben Tejada, I was high on him, and I'm beginning to admit that I was wrong on him. I honestly thought he could be a 280, 290 hitter with a decent on base percentage because he doesn't strike out. He gives you good at bats, gets deep in the counts. But he just regressed to the point where now he can't even find a spot on his team right now. It's not like he's tearing the cover off the ball down there. And his defense is very good. But, yeah, I mean, what's his potential upside? At most, what's he, a 290 hitter, no pop? I'm not saying you have to give up on him, but if you can get Johnny Peralta for 2 years, 1 or 2 years, at cheap, yeah, I'd rather have him than Ruben Tejada.
I think baseball owners, especially in New York, especially with the media that's going on there,
I think they kind of want to distance themselves from any storylines that have to do with steroids or performance-enhancing drugs. I really do. And the other thing about Nelson Cruz, I would say, is that if he historically was a hurt player, you know, if he's going into the second half of his career, what's to say he's not going to be as well?
That's what I'm saying, 2 years. Give him 2 years.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd rather invest those 2 years into someone else.
So, but yeah, everybody says they invest into somebody else. I want somebody a more sure
but
thing.
But you aren't sure things out there, man. Mike, you want a quick fix. I mean, you know.
Yeah, and that's the only thing they got. Their window is closed. Everybody thinks in this window, they got all these great young pitchers. Look at the Giants. They're two great pitchers that they had. They were cornerstone of their team. They both stink. Look at Justin Verlander has regressed. Look at all these guys. Pitchers don't have 12, 15-year careers. Look at C.C. Sabathia in his early 30s, and he's batting over now.
Hey,
he's done.
He's overweight.
Yeah.
Obese.
He's obese. He's got a
thyroid problem like me.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. No, but bottom line is that that's why these general managers get paid this money, because they do have the scouts out there. They do have the ability to go and look at these different players in these different leagues, you know, double A, triple A, and possibly go and have a prospect and find this leadership. I just don't think that – I think in New York, more than any other market, we tend to be only as good as the free agency class that's out there. And sometimes you have to find these little diamonds in the rough there, you know, and that's why these GMs get paid the way they do. With our GM, Cashman, he goes and he looks at who was good in 2002, and then he goes after him.
Yeah, he goes after him, yeah. I mean, so – To more like kind of put a bow on the biogenesis thing. I mean, that you could ever put a bow on it. I mean, so you really think that these guys that went down in this deal? I mean, a lot of the guys are no name type guys, or guys that never panned out, like Giordani or F. Mart or a couple Bastardo, a couple pitchers like that. Guys like Cabrera, who was coming into his own. I think last year he led the NL in steals, having a good year this year. Guys like Johnny Peralta. I mean, you think that there's going to be the same type cloud hanging over their head as there is a Ryan Braun? Or, I honestly think 5 years from now, people are not going to say Ever Cabrera, oh, he was the guy in bio. I honestly think that that'll be something that'll be.
Hey, Mike, talk about the Black Sox in 1919 and see if people remember their names in 1930. Yeah, I think these guys are going to be known for a long time. And you know what? None of these guys came out in the beginning and said, you know what, I'm under the suspicion. They did their mea culpas after they got caught. In other words, after they got the suspended, then they came out and said, yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Until baseball, I've been very, very vocal about this. Until baseball internally, I'm talking amongst the brotherhood, I'm talking about the players. Until these players step up and say, this is not right, this is going to continue. This is going to continue.
It's going to continue anyway. I mean, yeah, what do you think? You think these guys have got the three other big names, Cabrera, Cruz, Peralta, I mean, are they going to be in the same boat as, like, Rafael Palmeiro, where now, you know, he's done for life? I just get the sense that it's almost a blessing that they got caught up in this big thing, because the story's going to be Braun and A-Rod, and then they're just going to be afterthoughts. What do you think?
You're a very forgiving person, Mike.
I'm a Catholic. What do you got? What do you think, Neil?
I think A-Rod and Ryan Braun are the two faces of this the scandal, and I think they're the ones that are going to have to bear the brunt of it going forward. I mean, Sergio Escalona, Fontino de los Santos, I mean, are those guys going to be people that we're going to be talking about a decade from now? You know, even some of the bigger names that are on this, Antonio Bastardo, you know, I just don't see that hanging with them. And the fact that Cruz and Peralta and all of them just kind of took it on the chin and were like, yep, I did it, give it to me. I think they're going to be more forgivable than someone like Braun, who was like pulling a Lance Armstrong basically last year or 2 years ago, and A-Rod, who's going to fight it till his freaking grave. So, you know, I mean, the people that are denying it and they're going to keep fighting it and showing up in the media outlets and on blogs and whatnot, denying it and shaking their heads, yeah, they're going to be the guys that people remember versus the guys that are just accept it and move on.
I heard this question, and I'd be interested to see what some of the callers may think on this, as well as Mike and Neil's perspective. I heard this question on a talk show the other day. It said, out of these three guys, who is the worst, you know, morally? Lance Armstrong, Ryan Braun, or Alex Rodriguez?
I think this, without a doubt, it's Lance Armstrong.
Oh, yeah.
Because, the way he made his living off of, to me, exploiting cancer. I'll be honest with you. The Live Strong thing.
Oh, okay.
They were not even raising money for cancer research. It was cancer awareness, which to me, it's like, yeah, everybody has been impacted with somebody who has had cancer.
Yep.
That doesn't need any more awareness. It's not some rare disease. So
So it was just, I mean, the amount of money he made off of all that, him personally put in his pocket, if he was just a bicycle rider,
yeah,
you know, he wouldn't, so he exploited that. And then on top of that, denied everything, why would I do this when I'm a cancer survivor? To me, he is light years ahead of the other two. It's not even close. I don't care. Even Braun, I'd put Braun second and probably A-Rod third for Braun, what he did throwing that other guy under the bus. But where do you think, Neil, if you were to rank those three guys as far as being a horrible human being?
Well, you know, Lance Armstrong has got to be number one, just because of the way that he's treated other people. You know, I don't know that you can really compare him to anyone on earth other than Satan. So, I mean, with A-Rod, A-Rod's a guy who he just wants friends. It's not like he treats people badly. He's just a socially awkward person who he's not human. He doesn't know how to human interaction works. He doesn't know how to speak, how to think, how to act. I mean, look at his life. Meanwhile, Lance Armstrong, we've had numerous accounts of him just being a total Richard. And, you know, I just think that there's no comparison.
Yeah, I mean, A-Rod, I really think, not that he's a sympathetic figure, but I think A-Rod's problem, he is so insecure as a human being. And you get that, you know, Doug Glanville was on one of the ESPN shows. It was either Coward or Mike and Mike. And he was saying he actually played with him. He was in a locker room with him. And he said he's never seen a superstar have less clout in the locker room than him. And he would try to give these little rallying calls and, come on, guys, you got to do this. And everybody would just turn their head to him. Like, he just didn't carry any kind of weight, even though he was one of the most, you know, important hitters, important players in the league over the last 25 years, he just doesn't have that charisma and is just, and you know, he's like a loser, to be honest with you. He's just a guy, he's a loser, like dorky guy who happens to be unbelievable at baseball, which is a rarity because normally, you know, you get guys that are great athletes and things come easy to them and then they fall into the cool guy role, and he just was never able to do that. And this idea that, you know, I can't believe these guys would risk their legacy over this. I honestly think you have a guy like Alex Rodriguez. In his mind, he couldn't be this type of player without this. Clearly, if he's continuously using it, I think that, you know, he had all this pressure on him, and this is the only way he could succeed. And it was more than just the physical, you know, attributes that come along with the steroids. It also is the mental aspect of, I now have an edge. I think there's a lot to be said about that. It's the same thing, even if you're not cheating, it's the same guy going into the weight room and working your ass off in the off season for any sport. You have that edge. They talk about it with fighters all the time. They get into this fight, well, how did you know you were going to win? Because I knew I worked harder than anybody else. And there's that mental edge. And fighters talk about that all the time, MMA guys, boxers. And I think that he needed that mental edge, that I have this edge over everybody else. And not that I'm not making any excuses for him, but when people talk, I mean, talk about, oh, look at Sammy Sosa ruined his legacy. He would have had no legacy. He would have been a mediocre outfielder, and now, okay, great, he's never going to be in the Hall of Fame, but everybody's going to know his name until for millennia, who he was. If he had not taken steroids, he would have no legacy. He would be, oh, yeah, Sammy Sosa. He had a cup of coffee in the major leagues, played 8 years, bounced around a little bit, and that would be done with it. You know, I mean, what do you think about that, Neil?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on par with everything you're saying right now. And, you know, it's like beating a dead horse at this point. I honestly don't, you know, it to me, the amount of media coverage that A-Rod's getting for all this is, I don't know if that's something that he loves. And I think it is something that he loves. I mean, I was seeing blog posts this week about him going to Hooters, him outside of Starbucks. It's just like, he's basically this larger than life celebrity person. And, you know, I think he's eating it up, whatever he sees. And he, you know, he's back at center stage. He's back in the spotlight where he wants to be. So that's what, to me, is a little weird about A-Rod is that, you know, a lot of people are saying everything that he does is so that he can be the greatest ball player in baseball's history. But then, you know, you're feeding into these other things. Is it part of just creating his legend? You know, Babe Ruth has all these stories about, you know, he drank this many Cokes and ate this many hot dogs. What is A-Rod's legacy going to be? You know, is it going to be like this legacy that where he's in cartoons, he has his own candy bar and blah, 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 blah? or is it, or is A-Rod's legacy going to be like the guy that's just a giant tool?
No, his legacy is going to be Isaiah Thomas, you know, and that's going to be one of the most hated sports figures ever to play in New York. I disagree with Mike, respectfully, obviously disagree with Mike. I think A-Rod is a sociopath. I really hate the guy.
You're letting personal.
No, I a sociopath is somebody that can just go on to normal life and not be concerned about any implications of his behavior. I think he is in the bottom three out of the three guys that we talked about. I don't think that he's insecure. I think he's overconfident. I think that he is just the word that everyone calls him, and that is just a plain out fraud. And he's just a guy that cheats, and he has no conscience about cheating. I don't think that when he says something in the respect the other day of "I'm fighting for my life," you know, well, what life are you fighting for?
Yeah.
I just think that to me, when you know I'm sitting across somebody's charity, you know, at the Tyler Hooten thing, and knowing what steroids can do and the message that's getting and that's putting out there, and you know you're going and you're still doing that. The way that he looked at everyone in the eye when he had his teammates. You notice none of his teammates were there on Tuesday or Monday when they.
Oh yeah, because they don't like him.
They're saying that last time they were there, they were there for Pettit. You know, like when he had those guys, those support there. You know, he you know, I'm not sure if he lied to them or not. I'm sure he did.
I can't imagine that anybody in that locker room, other than maybe the guys that did it with him.
I have a very, very unpopular opinion of Mariano Rivera on this. I have a very unpopular opinion of Derek Jeter on this, especially Cano. I mean, these guys that go out there and they support him, he's my teammate. What are we supposed to do? No. This guy in this lineup compromises every single thing that these guys are trying to do, the guys at least who are trying to do everything correctly, you know. And as I said, Mariano Rivera, okay, and I know I'm going to get bashed for this, and the phone lines are going to light up on this, but Mariano Rivera.
We got Lene Kukua.
We still have Lene Kukua. Okay, what bothers me about Mariano Rivera is that, you know, the 42 thing, you know, if you watch the movie The 42, and, you know, he's still the only one that's still there. I just disagree. I disagree with the other the thing about the All-Star MVP. I know it's a meaningless thing, but it has some sort of significance because of the fact that, you know, the World Series, the team that won it for the World Series is going to have the home field advantage. I don't like the fact that he's going to every single market and he's getting cowboys.
But what's he
going to
do? He's going to come out and say, you know what? Alex Rodriguez cheated, and I'm tired of this in that sport.
That doesn't help the Yankees for this year to do that because Alex Rodriguez is going to be in your clubhouse the rest of the year. That doesn't help the Yankees. That's his job. It's to win games for the New York Yankees.
I don't know. I think baseball's been very good to Mariano Rivera, and maybe sometimes it's good for him to maybe repay that back.
All right. The last thing I'm going to say about Biogenesis is obviously the difference between the suspension that A-Rod got and everybody else, even Ryan Braun, and the idea that he was a multiple offender all in one. He impeded on the investigation.
That's what it is.
But Melvin Cabrera created
a website. Right.
And so I think that this Major League Baseball, everybody talks about how great they handled this because they came down with the iron fist. I think they handled it so poorly because he's got a legitimate chance of beating this completely.
Different,
yes, he does.
The different scenario and the reason being is that Melvin Cabrera did it before he was caught. A-Rod did that after he was caught, after they were doing. In other words, he went in and tried after they came out. What Melky Cabrera did was he did this website to try to protect him being caught. Like, in other words, that was part of his crime.
So that impeded the investigation. I think if you go into
there
a court
was no investigation,
court,
though. There was no investigation.
But once the investigation started, he had falsified documents.
I think he admitted to everything.
Well, now he did. I mean,
I just think that right after everything came out.
So how could you justify him getting more than four times everybody else? Everybody who took steroids is a multiple offender. You can't take steroids one time and be and have good. So everybody did it multiple times. So for them to now try, I mean, I think that they – the idea that they floated out there with this lifetime ban was a joke, and I said it from the beginning, and everybody on the show basically agreed that that would never hold up. And then they went with this arbitrary, okay, the end of this season and all of next season, some random number. If you're going to be a game of rules, and we talked about it last week about the NFL, people cheat in the NFL all the time. There's a set of rules. You break the rules. Here's the penalty.
Sure.
To sit there and to have just this random number thrown out there.
It's unprecedented.
It's unprecedented, and that right there – gives the union and all of A-Rod's lawyers enough ammunition to say this guy was discriminated against. There's going to be discrimination suits.
Yep.
There's going to be a lot of things. I think the way that Major League Baseball handled this was awful.
Yeah.
I mean, if they wanted to say, and if, even if they went to 150 games and they could point to, like, this is what was in place, but just to throw this arbitrary, even if they went to a lifetime ban, at least there's something there, and you say, you know, we this has been done before with Pete Rose. But just to just throw out a number that's never been seen before in all sports, when people have done the same thing that Alex Rodriguez did as far as taking steroids and then try to impede an investigation, Neil, I mean, do you think that at Major League Baseball, I think that Bud Selig and Major League Baseball screwed up on this because they got a risk of losing this altogether. And then what happened? Then it was like they got their face like the Roger Clemens investigation.
A part of me thinks that this might be MLB's way of staying relevant. You know, maybe this is their way of, like, you know, gaining some market share in some slow months in which, you know, playoff race hasn't really heated up yet. You have only so many storylines that people can latch on to. I mean, yeah, MLB messed up, but they're taking action, so. I don't know. I don't really see any problem with what's going on. I don't think this is going to be. It's already become a circus and a fiasco, and I think people are mostly ready to just move on at this point. You know, I don't see it going away. I think it's something that they're going to have to deal with, and you know, it's just how the sport's going to operate moving forward. I mean, it's never going to be a non-issue. You're always going to have someone who thinks they're going to beat the system. There's going to be a new drug that comes out that they don't test for, and, you know, we'll have another A-Rod in a decade or so. So, I mean, I can't really – we're talking about phony outrage. There's a decent amount of outrage going on right here. Baseball has always prided itself on being the game of tradition and history. And, you know, this is their way of holding on to that last generation of fans that still hold that above all else. You know what I mean? Like, the newer generation.
Another thing to keep in mind, for some that don't know, I'm involved with the Norwalk High School Alumni Association. This has a point, by the way. And
just giving a plug? Can we donate?
No. And a class of 76 is a lady by the name of Celia Borbowski, who is now working for the office of the commissioner. And what her job is to identify different community problems or different, and not problems, but maybe community initiatives is a better way of saying it. For example, she does the breast cancer on Mother's Day, you know, wear the pink backs and everything. And the reason I bring that up is that maybe there was a backdoor conversation. Maybe there was something, you know, on the side where when A-Rod came out in 2009 and admitted to, you know, the performance-enhancing drugs then, that Major League Baseball, through Celia's department, set him up with the Tyler Hooton organization, or A-Rod became sort of the face of,
yeah,
you know, the anti-steroids or anti-performance-enhancing drugs and did these talks and you know, and donated this money or whatever, something that wasn't out in the public. And so when he gets caught again, that the penalty is a little bit more severe or amplified, especially when there is not there's no rules that say, okay, we have to follow this pattern. So if it's arbitrary, maybe if there's something that we just don't know. So.
Yeah, it could be. I'm sure. Like, I'm not going to pretend I know the CBA all that well. No. And so you're right. Maybe I'm completely wrong. I doubt it. It's rare.
Uh-oh.
So let's get into some fun stuff, Neil. I mean, we'll start with some bad news, obviously, the David Wright injury. He's going to be out 3 to 5 weeks, you know, pretty decent grade strain there. So he's going to be out a while, but we call for it immediately. Can we call up Wilmer Flores? We call for it on our Facebook page. And finally, he came up last night, Neil. I mean, the guy's been crushing it. We've heard about this guy. They signed him at 16. He's now 21, which is obviously still very young, but he's had a lot of minor league experience. He's down there. Has 85 RBIs, I think, in the Pacific Coast League, 14 home runs, hitting 320, something. They bring him up. First of all, I mean, why did they wait so long to bring a guy like this up? I mean, once you pass that threshold of, you know, whatever it is, May 15th or June 1st or whatever, we're talking about arbitration eligible stuff, why did they wait so long to bring him up when they were scuffling so badly offensively?
I think it's, you know, you get burned once and you become gun-shy. You know, I think they've done that in the past where they brought a guy up and he's at the stage was too big for him. He got hurt You know, I think they brought up Jose Reyes when he was 20 and he got hurt. They Henry Mejia, who's pitching lights out right now, they brought him a couple times and he didn't fit the bill. So I'd rather have them show some precaution on the younger guys like that versus a guy that's is virtually a no-brainer like Zach Wheeler. Like, if anything, Wheeler should have been up here day one. I don't understand why he was sitting down in the minor leagues. It, you know, it's partially because Las Vegas is a horrible place for pitchers, and of course the numbers don't really add up. But with some of with Flores, take your time. I mean, you have I think you have capable people filling in. I don't think that he's going to outperform anyone that's currently on the roster, like a Justin Turner or someone like that. You know, meanwhile, our pitching staff was hurting big time, so I think Wheeler was, you know, the right move to make considering the other guys were couldn't even get to the fifth inning. So, to me, I don't see a huge issue with Flores sitting down in the minor leagues and getting some exposure. Although, I think, you know, if Wright had not got injured, that Flores is it would be great to bring Flores up to be with Wright while he's healthy and playing. You know, Wright's been criticized for not being, you know, the most vocal guy in the world, but he leads by example, and I think, you know, he has the support of his fellow Mets teammates. So for Flores to actually be in the dugout with Wright, a healthy Wright, I agree with him being up there. But, you know, for us to bring him up to, for what, you know?
Well, I mean, look, I don't know why a guy wasn't up here playing first base. I mean, the one knock on the guy is, you know, he was signed as a shortstop at 16. It's kind of hard to, I mean, every good athlete at 16 is a shortstop. I was a freaking shortstop at 16, and I couldn't hang at the Division III level. So, you know, I got moved to the outfield. So, I mean, you know, he signed that shortstop. He never could really find a home defensively. Why not try to stay in the outfield when you have so many problems in the outfield? Why not try him at first base when, you know, you see what Ike Davis is doing? And so, I mean, I just don't know why you don't have him up there at some point, in some capacity, giving him significant time. Throw him in the outfield. He's going to be worse than Lucas Duda. You know, how many times do we have to call up Mike Baxter and Kirk Nieuwenhuis? So he's here. He got his first major league hit tonight. He's 1-for-2. Mets are winning 2-0. You know, I think that this guy is somebody, you know, we're all counting on Harvey. We're all counting on Wheeler and Neath. But on the offensive side, you got Wright. You got Murph. One of these young guys has to pan out. We've seen enough of Ike Davis, in my opinion. I can't see how they bring him back. Even if he turns things around, I mean, he would have to bat 400 from here on in because you get back-to-back seasons, putting up the numbers he's putting up is atrocious. A slugging percentage under 300 for a guy with that kind of power potential is unacceptable. You're going to need Wilmer Flores in your future, I think, or either that or, you know, we don't have a shot. I mean, you don't even want to get Johnny Peralta or Nelson Cruz. So, I mean, this guy's going to be a part of the future. I want to see something out of him. Hopefully, you know, he plays well enough over this 4 or 5 week tryout where that they say clearly he's not the third base. He's never had a role as a third baseman, but can he be a guy that can play first base? Can he be a guy that can play one of the corner outfield positions? You know, the power numbers down in the Pacific Coast League are always going to be a little skewed. So I don't know that this guy's a 25, 30 home run guy. But it's hard to tell. He's 21 years old. It's hard to tell what somebody's potential is going to be when their body fills out. I'm excited about Wilmer Flores. You know, it gives me another reason. You know, that's the one thing we talked about going into the season with the Mets was we didn't think they could compete, but there's going to be enough call-ups or enough things just to give you a little inkling of hope. And we got that out of Harvey. You know, we wanted to see him take the next step. He's taken that and then some. We wanted to see Wheeler come up and be successful. He's done that. We were hoping to see Darnell. He's actually been playing pretty well now that he's back off the injury. I'm sure we'll see him in September, you know, and now Wilmer Flores. So, you know, there are some things to hope for, and I think that he gives you a little bit of that. But, Neil, why don't we get into Duda? Are you serious? You got a couple good ones lined up. Before that, Neil, I mean, can you tell the listening audience a little bit about your gig Monday night? You were at Gotham Comedy Club. I mean, VIP performance. How did that go? I mean, were there some big-time guys there? Louis C.K. there? Who's there?
Well, Jim Gaffigan was supposed to appear and be on the set list, and I think I was scheduled to go the second after him. So I was like, well, thank God I didn't go directly after him. He ended up not showing up, but, you know, it was a good turnout. It was probably the best turnout I've had so far. You know, a lot of PG, G-rated jokes, you know, clean stuff coming out of my mouth, as always.
I'm sure. Yeah, that's so you right there.
But, you know, I'd give myself a B-minus, C-plus. I ended up forgetting two of the jokes. You know, the tough thing about weekday gigs is, you know, I have a full-time job, so it's hard to get in the rehearsal time and make sure that I get everything down. But, you know, I think it went well. I actually had a young black couple in the first row, unable to make eye contact with me the entire set. So that's something that I think I'm going to hang on my door, on the fridge. That's a gold star effort.
Well, that's what they said. That's what Daniel Tosh said. He always tries to, every joke, he wants to make at least one person so uncomfortable that they either leave or can't look at him. So that's what you do. You keep going another level of awkwardness and just debauchery, and to the point when people just say, "Hey, check please. I can't take this Neil Lynch guy."
Let me ask you, if you gave yourself a B minus, C plus, there was somebody else, my co-host, one of my co-hosts for the guest co-host tonight, he got an A plus. And Mike, why don't you talk a little bit about your little award that you won the other night, the movie quotes.
Oh, that's right. So we had Roger Noriega, who's the president of MDB Media. He has a show every Monday night. I think it's called Manic Monday. It's not part of the sports family. It's part of the general MDB Media. And I was up against a couple other NDB Media hosts. We had movie trivia, 80s and 90s flicks. I thought I had no chance. We had a guy who had a sci-fi show. The guy, his name was Ian. I forget his last name. He's from the UK. He's got a show on Blog Talk Radio. And he has Lou Ferrigno as his guest this week. I mean, that's the type of heavyweights I was going up against. We had Zeke, who's doing a Lost show starting, I think, this Saturday. He's going to do he's going to start breaking down the show Lost, which I love. And I took it down. I took down the whole thing. I won it. I was very surprised at myself. I'm doing it on double duty. I had my little newborn in my arms most of the time I was on the show. My 2-year-old just never sleeps, so she's just like running around. I'm checking on her, and I took it down. So I appreciate you bringing that up. You got to check out that show. I'll post a link to our website. It's pretty cool. Roger does a great job. I mean, it's so, you know, we think we do a decent show here, and
sure,
we have a good time. But the way how, like, you know, Roger just sounds like a guy who's on, you know, CBS Radio or something like that. He's at a different level than we are right now.
WNBC.
Yeah, he's got the whole thing down. And so he's a little bit better than us. But
is there going to be you mentioned that there possibly is going to be another show coming up in regards to 80s TV.
80s TV. I think it might be this Monday or the following Monday. I was invited back to go on there and defend my title, 80s TV Trivia. I think I'm going to do pretty well on 80s TV Trivia. I mean, you know, in the 80s, I mean, I was born in 80s, so if it's early 80s stuff, I got to hope that I saw it on Nick at Night or some rerun stuff, but if it's late 80s, we're talking Full House, Family Matters stuff, I'm going to crush it, dude.
Yeah, well, the only shows that I watched in the 80s, and I'm a little older than you, is I used to take a piece of aluminum foil, and I used to twist it, and I used to stick it in the back of the cable.
All right, yeah.
I apologize.
All right, Matty, all right. All right, move on to Neil.
All right,
Neil. No, the dude, are you serious? What do you got, Neil?
Normally we're used to baseball players getting freak injuries that no other athlete in their right mind should ever endure. But then you have someone like Kevin Kolb. Kevin Kolb, former Eagle, former Cardinal, now I believe he's a Bill. He hurt himself at practice by slipping on a rubber mat.
Come on. Why do you have rubber mats? What are they? That's what they do when they're dropped? They do on rubber mats? I did not hear this. I wish we had Tony D in studio.
Yeah, apparently he didn't fall, which is good. That means he's got some good legs under him. You know, he's been working out the bottom half of his body. But trainers looked at his left knee, and he didn't participate for the rest of the practice. EJ Manuel ended up taking the first team snaps and finished out the day. But, you know, if you're Kevin Kolb, like, and something like this happens, maybe it's a sign from a God, from above, from Allah, from something greater than you, saying maybe you shouldn't play professional football anymore.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? That's a blessing for them, because they want. I mean, deep down, all Bills fans, and I'm sure the front office wants DJ Manuel to win that job. You draft a guy that high, you want him to win that job, and this is, hey, buddy, it's yours to lose now. This guy can't even walk on rubber mats.
Can we speak of other couple of freak injuries like that? Gus Frat.
Remember, he headbutted. Yep. Gus Frat headbutted the padding.
Yep. And then there was one other one that Sean Ireland and I talked about today was Billy Gramatica.
Oh yeah, he made like a 35-yard kick Yeah.
And just it wasn't like a game-winning kick.
We were at that game.
No, you were not.
We were at that game.
Did you guys see it from the crowd?
Absolutely.
I mean, we didn't know
at that point, you know, I mean, that he had hurt himself. We saw that he jumped up and then he fell down. But, yep, we were all actually, we had Jay Fache, Dave Booth. There was about 12 guys. Did all the listeners know?
Yeah, we all went there. And, we had a great game. That was a great game, actually. But, yeah, it was a Saturday. And Sean, when we were talking about that game today, and mentioned that was a game where the stadium got, there was lightning. I completely forgot about it.
I'm sure you were stoned sober.
I was definitely not stoned, but I wasn't sober. But yeah, so that was at that, you know, a couple of those freak accidents that happened.
Well, there you go. What else you got, Neil?
Have either of you been to Russia?
No, never been. I heard it's God's country out there. That's German.
Oh.
What do you got? What happened out in Russia, dude? I know we got Snowden out there. That
son of a beehole.
Drago. What happened out in Russia, Neil?
Well, I mean, the Russians are a pretty stoic breed of people, and, you know, they're not the happiest in the world. I'll give them that. But apparently, tourists and athletes will be subject to the new anti-gay laws that Vladimir Putin signed this past summer at the Winter Olympics in 2014. Your thoughts?
I did hear this. So they're going to very strongly curb any sort of gay rights stuff publicly. I mean, to be honest with you, when there's things like this, it actually benefits the gay movement. It's like those crazy, you know, Westboro Baptist Church people. If I was, a gay activist, I would be thrilled about people like that, because it actually, as disgusting as it is, what it does is it makes the anti-gay people look that much crazier.
Yeah.
So you get Russians that are going to be boycotting any sort of pro-gay stuff. It's you couldn't ask for more. You couldn't ask for a better publicity. It's like, okay, you don't want to side with us? Side with the Russians, the crazy Russians who are going to, you know, silence speech and all that. And then it becomes, oh, you're anti-gay marriage? Okay, then you're a Russian commie. I think that's the best thing that could happen to them. I mean, what do you think, Neil?
Yeah, it's just it's insane. You know, I think, you know, we're kind of spoiled in a way. We're warped in that, you know, we have the benefit of living in one of the most progressive areas, I would say, you know, despite what happens on a day-to-day basis and, you know, how low people can get in certain areas of the Northeast. I think that, you know, New York City is one of the most diverse and accepting areas. And so when you see something like this, it kind of throws you for a loop, because it's like, really, in 2013, 2014, we're going to try and curb this when, you know, really the Olympics are supposed to be a celebration of diversity, if you will. I mean, take a look. You have all kinds of different, both men and female. You have black, white, Asian, blah, blah. I mean, the Olympics are supposed to be kind of embracing that ethos, that philosophy. And so for them to establish these anti-gay laws, and I mean, there's got to be a backlash, especially from the gay athletes. And I think this is going to be a momentous historical occasion, because, you know, I feel like you're going to see more and more gay athletes, as we come closer to the Olympics, take a stance and say, you know what, no dice, I'm gay, I'm boycotting. And this could go down as one of the most controversial and momentous Olympics on record.
Neil, where are they? I mean, these guys, you know, when you're talking about these athletes, especially professional athletes, I mean, where are they? You know, I mean, it's kind of what I alluded to earlier about the steroid crisis, in the sense that the only way that this is going to change is if these people stand up and say, hey, we're not going to tolerate this. I'm talking about the players. Well, there's got to be more Jason
Collins
out there, you know, other people that's not afraid to take the backlash on this. And until that, it's never going to be accepted.
Yeah. I think all those things that you just said, Neil, are right on point. It has the potential to really be a firestorm, and only for the good of, gay rights. Because you can't possibly take the side, if you're an American and you believe in American values, of this Russian silence movement that they got going out there to silence people and their freedom of speech. So I think it's going to really become a
here's the line in the sand for the gay rights community, and you're going to say, okay, you want to, I mean, we have had all these watermark moments in the last, really, 12 months, especially with all the stuff with the, you know, the gay marriage stuff, and then, you know, civil unions and all these stuff, and then the Jason Collins thing, and I think that this is really going to be, okay, finally the line, the sand has been drawn. You're either with us or you're on the other side. There is no more gray area here, and, there, you know, it's going to be a tough conversation to have at the bar that you're the one siding with the Ruski, you know? I like, you know, you really, like, went deep here. Normally,
yeah,
it's all, you know, below the belt D&T, Joe.
Maybe you're drinking the vodka.
Yeah. Now, Neil drinks water on the show. He doesn't like, I mean, we're over here, me and Matt. Like a couple
we're drinking guys. Russian water.
Yeah, we have a, yeah, I know. I feel bad drinking, drinking vodka right now.
We're a couple of men. We share a cocktail. It's like, you know, it's a bonding experience,
guys. Neil's straight H2O, brother.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's a celebrity. He's a, yep. He's at the Gotham Comedy Club. I can't get tickets there if I wanted to.
Making people uncomfortable.
There you go. What else you got, Neil?
Well, I'll say this. I woke up one Thursday morning after coming back from Norwalk at 1 in the morning, and there was a letter on my pillow signed by my liver, and it said, if you want me to stick around, you gotta cut to the water on Wednesdays. So, you know, I listen to my body, and I got to respond to it.
Water Wednesdays for Neil. I like that. You know, maybe I should probably adhere to that. I'm the one with two kids upstairs. But, hey, that's a different ballgame. What else you got, Neil?
All right, so I wanted to keep it highbrow, and I wanted to continue with the theme of being deep and socially responsible. So I'll go with this. Jadeveon Clowney's childhood nickname was Doo-Doo after he pooped in a pool.
Jadeveon Clowney.
The big guy
South Carolina. South Carolina, yeah. So he pooped in a pool. How old was he? Did it give you, I mean, was he 6 or was he 14? I guess it doesn't matter. You do in a pool. That's going to stick with you.
Hey, let me ask Mike a question. What movie was this from? Judy!
That's Caddyshack.
There you go.
See? That's why you won.
That's why I won. I mean, that's why I'm the reigning champion. I'm the media. So what do you think? Yeah, I mean, does it give you any details how old this cat was at the time?
No. All I know is that it was Kansas defensive lineman Keon Stowers. He's a childhood friend of Jadeveon's. And he apparently spilled the beans at KUSports.com. Our childhood name that we gave him was Doo-Doo. When we were little, we were in the swimming pool, and he doo-dooed in the swimming pool. Ever since then, we've called him Doo-Doo. I love hanging out with those guys. When I go back home, we're real tight. So tight that we like to reveal our embarrassing childhood nicknames to for the media.
Oh, I mean, of course I would. If I had a very good friend growing up who doo-dooed in a pool and now he's going to be the first overall pick, mm-hmm. I'd be the first one. I mean,
absolutely.
As a duty, as a friend, you have to do that, man.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree. As a matter of fact, I still got some people that I know from the Ascension Beach pool, you know, that that went in the kiddie pool there. So
And did a number two in there.
And I'm holding that down.
Doo-Doo Clowney.
Yep.
My man.
What movie?
That's American Gangster.
American Gangster, my man.
I mean, that's a slam dunk. Neil, you got anything else? What else you got?
I found out from Florida coach Will Muschamp that woodpeckers can't get concussions.
Well, how could that be? If that's the case, then we got to get a team of scientists figuring out what, I mean, are there skulls that hard? I mean, can, like, those rams that butt each other in the head, can they get concussions? Or is it just, are stupid, you know, people the only people that can get concussions?
Basically quarterbacks.
Yeah. So, I mean, is woodpecker the only animal in the animal kingdom that can't get concussions? Do they have that, Neil? Can I go another level?
I didn't get that far, but I would think that, you know, there's no way that a woodpecker is, I mean, well, then again, there are some animals that have qualities or traits that no other animal can. I mean, you know, is there another animal besides a starfish that can just grow back limbs after it's cut off? I mean, I don't know.
I think crabs can. I think that I always learn if you rip, you know, you used to get the spider crabs in your lobster pot there in New England.
That's a layup, Mike.
Well, that fits the crabs talk. It fits a little more into duty. You're serious,
yeah.
Neil.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I think other things can regrow. I mean, sharks can regrow their teeth,
yeah.
Even though sharks is a little sensitive subject with me right now, Neil. You know that.
No, I know, and I've been trying not to bring it up all show because I understand that you're you're on edge. And, you know, much like when a shark smells blood in the water, that you are the shark smelling the blood in the water when it comes to sharks.
Now, can we talk? Let's just talk about it. It's going to come out at some point. I mean, I don't get mad about anything. We talked about it last week. Words don't offend me. I don't get offended by a lot of things. But Shark Week is something I've been watching for a very long time, way before it became cool to watch Shark Week. I mean, when I was a kid, I'd be watching Discovery Channel. I loved all those shows. Then you get now, they have a lot more Nat Geo Wild. I'm into all that stuff. I love the nature shows. I love Planet Earth, Life, the North America one that just came out. And so Shark Week is awesome. Even though there's only a certain amount of things you can go to, I watch it religiously. So Sunday night, I'm super excited, Maddie,
yep,
to watch. And there's a show about the megalodon, the largest shark that ever lived, largest fish that ever lived. I'm like, this is going to be fantastic. There might be proof that it's still alive. And there was actually a Monster Quest, another show that I like that's been canceled, that Mike Thompson, our former producer, used to work on.
Sure.
And they said maybe there's some evidence. And then I'm getting in the first half hour, I'm riveted. And then about, it's a two-hour show. About half hour in, I start to realize this is a phony show. And then I'm like, these guys are actors. And then they show a picture of a whale bitten in half, and it's clearly a fake thing, and there's like a fake homemade video made. And I'm like, these people, and they made a fake documentary on the Discovery Channel during Shark Week.
Yep.
I mean, if that is something, and I don't want to be the, you know, that's something that's outrageous, Neil.
Well, it's like being 8 years old and finding out the WWF is fake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you hear about, by the way, that there was a shark found on the New York subway today?
I saw somebody posted on Facebook, but I didn't read the thing.
That was real.
It was like, oh, did you send it to me? Or no, you sent it to me, Neil. Weekend at Bernie's, was that you?
Yeah.
So what was that about? Can you give me some details about that? I like the gold away.
I wish the viewers could just see what we saw.
Yeah, that's your ass I sent that to you. So this might not have been part of your duty or serious, but what happened with the shark on the subway, Neil?
All right. So there's no real details around it so far as of yet, but apparently someone was on the, I think it was the Q train heading to Queens or something like that, and they boarded the car, and there was just a dead shark just chilling out on the subway car floor. It was creating quite a stench. More people got on the subway, and they decided to have some fun with it until the conductor came and took it away and ruined everyone's fun. So, you know, it's apparently someone has said they've been riding the subway for years, decades, and they've never seen anything that weird. And I don't know if you've ever ridden a New York City subway, but there's serious ish that goes down on those subways. So for someone who's been a grizzled vet to say it's the weirdest thing they've seen, well, I guess you know it's Shark Week when that's going down.
Yeah, well, I know. That's just viral marketing. But you know what, Shark Week, you lost me. I didn't even watch it last night. And then they have a shark after dark. And it's Dominic Monaghan from Lost and Lord of the Rings and all that, who has a great show called Wild Things, or I forget what it's called. It's on the BBC America channel. It's fantastic. It goes out and does all these nature things. And one of the guys who was the actor in the show, who then was like, yeah, no, Megalodon's not real. That would have, you know, pissed me off. Or what, you got anything else, Neil, due to your series? I didn't want to hijack you due to your series with my Shark Week outrage. But what else you got?
No, the only other item I wanted to point out was, I guess this high school coach, at J.H. Rose High School, he's an interim coach. He has been suspended 1 week for, a mural, a slogan that he painted on the wall of the locker room. And their rival is a school by the name of D.H. Connolly. And so the slogan, inspirational slogan that he painted on the wall in the locker room is family, unity, discipline, heart, commitment. Now, if you take the first letters of each of those words, you have F-U-D-H-C. Should he have been suspended a week for that?
That's silly to suspend the guy for that. I mean, don't you agree? Again, Neil, phony outrage. That's your phony outrage moment of the week. You're going to suspend the – I mean, did your high school coach ever drop an F-bomb? Did they ever talk trash about your rival? Come on.
Absolutely. I mean, when he wasn't peeing in the woods because he had a bladder problem, he was all about trashing other teams and mostly getting in my ear and dropping several profanity-laced tirades in my dome, which stuck with me for years to come. and have explained why I have a 1-2 interception touchdown interception ratio.
Something to hang your hat on, Neil. At least you threw a couple TDs. You got him in the end zone. You got to take chances, dude, like your boy Eli. All right, we're going to pay some bills very quickly. We're going to be back. Hopefully we'll have a guest when we come back. We're the Tri-State Sports Guys. If you do want to probably going to get in some bonus time today. So if you do want to call in, the number, as always, 347-637-2306 with the Tri-State Sports Guys. We'll be right back.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Every year you assemble your closest friends to prepare for another season in the knockdown, drag-out world of make-believe football.
4 minute chess.
You were born with the one skill every manager needs to play fantasy football. Absolutely no skill playing real football.
Not so good at catching.
Imaginary catches. Imaginary touchdowns. Next up, an imaginary score with an imaginary woman.
Good imagination.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, O Swami of the sidelines. You may come in dead last, but you're always first with us.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri. Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Arms swinging, knees bending, head bobbing to no particular rhythm. You're either dancing or you have fleas.
Call me a doctor.
As soon as you hit the dance floor, the taunts begin. Is that all you got, playa? Unfortunately, yes, that's all you got.
Pour it on now.
Who's in the house? Some guy who can't dance. That's who's in the house.
You're done.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Happy Feet, because you really put the oogie in boogie.
Mr. Really, really, really bad dancer.
Follow the story in the Ragnarok Rising Saga by D.A. Roberts. Available on Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, and BooksAMillion.com. Visit RagnarokRising.Weebly.com.
All right, we're back. I guess Bud Light dumped a lot of money into us, so they got back-to-back ads this week, Neil, which I'm always excited about. So, we've touched on a lot of things today. We talked about a lot of Biogenesis stuff. We talked about the Mets. We got into a great Due to You Serious. We're waiting on a guest to join us shortly, who I'm very excited about. Matt, it's been a pleasure to have you here in studio. Again, the number to call, if anybody's out there listening, you want to call in, dispute anything we've said, obviously you can, 347-637-2306.
Hello.
Joining us on the Tucci Lumber Hotline, I believe we have one of the winningest coaches in the history of high school baseball, Rich Hoffman out of Miami, Florida. Rich, are you with us?
I am. I'm standing on a baseball diamond, believe it or not. Just finished with practice with one of my little teams.
Oh, Rich, that's fantastic. I mean, me and my co-host Neil both played baseball together at Johns Hopkins. We talk always about our high school experience, so I'm thrilled to have you on. I mean, looking through your resume, it's pretty amazing. I mean, you've got over 1,000 career wins, 2 state titles. You've been nationally ranked several times. You've produced over 40 Sentite titles. Over 40 guys that you've coached have gone on to get drafted, which is amazing. 170 have gone on to play college baseball. well, at the scholarship level, I'm sure a lot more have gone on and played. So I want to start out a little bit about your high school career. I mean, you took over a team that wasn't exactly, from what I've read, a high school dynasty, and you turned into exactly that. So talk a little bit about instilling, because we talk about this all the time. We've had our local coaches here on a lot. We've had mostly high school football, but every coach to a man, they always talk about instilling an identity in a program. And this program is not just about this team that you have on the field this year or next year. It's about an identity, whereas the kids enroll into this school and they know to put on that baseball uniform is a privilege. So I wanted you to talk about a little bit of how you did that starting out your high school career, Rich.
Well, it's kind of a rags to riches, I guess, because I came to South Florida in 1967 and started my teaching career six decades ago. And the first year, our school was a small Christian school with a couple hundred kids in the entire student body, K through 12. So we started very humbly with no field, no teams, no nothing. And the first year, I didn't even have a baseball team. I had a softball team, believe it or not. Second year, we joined the Florida High School Activities Association, and I had my first season, and that was in 1969. So I take credit for coaching in six decades, even though I'm not quite that old. I'm not too old yet, but plenty old. And our first year was a struggle. You know, we were 2-13-1. We hit about 139 as a team, and we had one extra base hit that year. And that guy was out trying to stretch a double into a triple. So, you know, I had some problems starting out. And no field to practice on or anything. So it was pretty tough. And I thought a game was five innings long because we got beat by the 10-run rule so many times. So that's how we started. But every year after that, for the next 40 years, we always had a winning record. And the highlights came about 1988 all the way through 2000. You know, we won 10 state championships during that time.
I mean, that's an amazing feat, because you're talking about turnover. Obviously, even if you have a great class of kids, at most you're getting 3 to 4 years at them. So that's just an amazing feat. So that goes into what, you know, I'm talking about instilling an identity into a program. And we have a few, you know, we're out of Connecticut. We have a few of those style programs up here. Our high school program, Norwalk, Connecticut, Norwalk High, it was one of those type programs where, you know, year after year, we knew we were going to be a powerhouse.
Right. How about Ray Korn? Is he up there?
I don't know Ray Korn. Where's he coach at?
Okay. I think he's in Connecticut, but I'm not sure. He's
a legendary Hall of Fame coach. Yeah, we had Pete Tucci was our coach in Norwalk, and I mean, he's going to go down. He'll be a Hall of Famer in the state of Connecticut for being a coach. He also coaches football. It's the same type guy, and it became. And I remember being in the seventh grade, and couldn't wait to go play high school baseball for him and for that program. And it was that type of just instilling that type of mentality. Now you had a lot of talent as well to have 45 guys, I believe, get drafted and play professional baseball is an insane amount of people. And, you know, the two biggest ones locally, Doug Minkiewicz, played for both of the teams up there locally. And then obviously the one that everybody knows you for is Alex Rodriguez. So we've talked at length about Alex Rodriguez. I'm a Mets fan, and so is my co-host, but we have a guy, our producer's a big Yankee fan. We have a lot of, you know, different opinions about a guy like Alex Rodriguez, but what is interesting to me is Alex Rodriguez as a person. I mean, obviously he's a big talent, but it's amazing to me. He seems like a very insecure person for the kind of talent he has, judged by his actions and judged by, you know, what other teammates have said about him. So why don't you, if you can, just give me a little glimpse. I mean, when you first saw Alex Rodriguez, we've all seen his early stats in high school. He didn't, you know, take off by storm as a freshman or anything. What was your first impression of Alex when you saw him step on your field and how he developed as a high school player?
Well, you could tell he had talent. You know, there's no question about that. And, the first time you saw him, he didn't say he was going to be a Hall of Fame type player or one of the best that ever played the game. But he had all the actions and reactions and everything that it took. And, of course, I didn't know what his work ethic would be or anything. So, but, you know, soon found out that nobody works harder, wants it more than he does, or went after it with such passion. So when you have a guy with tremendous athletic potential and ability, you have the physical characteristics and traits that he does, and then you combine that tremendous desire and work ethic, that's when you have a superstar. And it became pretty evident by the time he was a junior.
Now, like for me personally, I stayed in close contact with my high school coach. You see it in the home run derby a lot. You see guys, I think Josh Hamilton had his high school coach throwing to him in the home run derby. I mean, was Alex the guy, after you were done coaching him, that you stayed in contact with as he went on to his professional career?
Early on, pretty much, yeah. I mean, I spent at least part of every season, a week or so. I wouldn't say that we were communicating on a weekly basis or anything, but, you know, if I indicated I might like to come out or whatever, I'd spend a week with him, you know, and stuff when he was single. So I had some great moments in Washington, you know, at Seattle. I got to throw out a first pitch in front of 40,000 people on his birthday, his 21st birthday, when he signed his first long-term contract. And that was a real highlight because I was juiced, you know. I shouldn't say that word, I guess, right? But I was really pumped up. And,
we both raised our eyebrows.
That was fun, and I got to do it in Texas. I got to meet, you know, Yogi Berra, Joe Torre. I was in the clubhouses. The chefs asked me what I wanted to eat and sat in good seats. And all things that high school coaches only dream about, I've been able to do. So from that standpoint, I've really been blessed, you know. The last 5 years, our communication and contact has been pretty minimal.
It's Matt, and we had spoken earlier today. Talk to us a little bit about that 1993 season there. You know, we were going back with Hurricane Andrew and whether the field was going to be able to be played upon, the scouts and, you know, all the people from the major leagues that were coming to look at Alex as well as other members of your team.
Yeah, that was quite a year because in August, Andrew hit, and everybody lost everything almost, you know. And so at that point, you know, it was really my infield was in the outfield. The clay was all in the outfield, and it was like an infield in my left field there because it blew in. We were right on the ocean there. So that was a traumatic thing. We started a month late of school, and then Alex played football for us during that season. And then 93 came along, and when we started working out and running a little bit and long tossing in December, not as a practice, but just kids working on their own, scouts would just watch them, just come to look at them, you know, physically, and just kind of see what was going on, what was he looking like, just kind of like a guy would look at women on the beach, you know. So then in our first scrimmages of the year, we had like 20 scouts at an inter squad, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks before the season. So it was really an interesting, it was a lot of fun, you know. But I had another first rounder earlier, so it wasn't like we weren't used to it, but this was at an all-time high because, you know, we were number one team in the nation also the whole season just about. You know, until the last game we lost, but it was a fun experience. I helped kind of pare down the agents, you know, and all the big guys were in their living room, and I kind of acted a little bit as a buffer in that way and stuff like that.
Now, you know, when the Selena Roberts book came out, and there was talk of, oh yeah, you know, this Alex Rodriguez has been taking steroids since high school, and everybody knew about it. I immediately read the book, and I thought that was – I didn't even know who you were, but I said that's unfair to the coach because when I was in high school, I knew guys on my football team and my baseball team that were taking steroids, and there was no chance in the world my coach knew. And when I was in college,
yeah,
There was no chance these guys knew. And so, they throw these things out there, like everybody, that wants to throw, the first stone and say, well, everybody should have known. That's BS. Now, I'm putting maybe words in your mouth, but that being said, how surprised were you in 2009 when all of this came out and you saw him on national television admitting it? I mean, as a guy who's known him at that point for close to 20 years, were you blown away? Was it something that maybe in the back of your mind you thought was a possibility? What was your first reaction when you heard his admission that he did it?
Well, let me just go back to what you said earlier. It's two parts here. You know, the high school situation. Selena Roberts is a fraud, you know, and what she put in the book was proved to be baseless, you know. So I think two things really tell the story. And you're right. Coaches usually, are the last to know. But here's two points to consider. Number one, Alex was so poor that guys had to buy him a hamburger, okay? So how is he going to afford to have drugs unless somebody gives it to him? Number two, if a guy does that, sometime post-history or even during, somebody will say something which put where there's smoke, there's fire. And there has never been one player that played with him all those years that has ever said anything to me after the fact, even to 20 years later. Okay, so if no other players, unless this is the best-kept secret in the history of the world, which I doubt, then, that to me is proof and evidence right there.
Yeah, Coach, I don't want to interrupt you, but that's the best point I've heard, because I'm a guy who always is anti-conspiracy theory, because somebody's going to talk. Now, I'm sure every guy that played on that team in 92, 93 with Alex Rodriguez, all they want to do is talk about the fact that they played. I mean, I played against Mark Teixeira, and I tell every girl I know that I played against Mark Teixeira. You're always going to want to brag and blabber and blabber.
Sure.
So if somebody knew that Alex Rodriguez would take a steroid in 1992, they would be on Sports Illustrated. They would be on every single thing making a buck off of it. And I think that's
absolutely
the greatest point. And even me, I had never even thought of me. Of course it would have come out. Of course somebody would have made a buck off of that. They would have come out and said, I was the middle guy.
Right. And to be honest with you, Alex has kind of left those guys in under the bus, or left them in the past. So if they really had a bone to pick with him and they were pissed off at him, somebody would have probably tried to hurt him, So that to me, that's just hogwash. Now, getting to the second point, I was stunned, no question. I believed beyond a shadow of a doubt, and I was so proud of him, that he was the one that was above this. So, yeah, that one shocked me. This one here is just, here we go, Clemens, Bonds. Now Alex, so I wasn't as shocked at this one as I was on the other one. The only thing that kind of surprised me here was that fact that he did it again or kept doing it,
Yeah.
Coach, this is Neil Lynch. I'm Mike DePalma's co-host. I think that the word that a lot of people use when they describe Alex nowadays is delusional. And I'll admit I've used the word as well, but I don't know him on a personal level. Do you think that he's dramatically changed since his high school days? I know you described him as a fun-loving prankster. Is he still that fun-loving prankster, or do you think that the high salary and the media attention and the spotlight have thoroughly changed him, and that he now has this fantasy world that he lives in?
Well, let's put it this way. I've done interviews now for 2 days. It must be 15 or 16 of them, and my head's spinning. And all I want to do is, get something to eat. And Alex faces this every day of his life, only at a higher intensity level with more negativity. So, and he's a rock star. He became a rock star. It's a path that he went on. And, his life, it's kind of like when he left Westminster and he left high school and he left Miami for Major League Baseball. He kind of left that behind and took on a different persona with different contacts, different people, different friends. And then, as time went on, he signed that other contract. Then he became a villain, and then, also became more involved with big-time personalities all over the country, whether it be business or whether it be Hollywood, you know, and then the girls and all that stuff. So when you're at that level, you know, I don't know what you think at that level, because honestly, I haven't spent enough personal one-on-one time with him to even know philosophically where he is at this point. So I don't think anybody does, and maybe he doesn't even know particularly, you know. I do know one thing, though. He loves baseball, and that's his biggest passion. That's why, if that's taken away from him, I think it's really going to be tough on him.
What do you think that Alex needs to do to get back in the good graces of his fans? You know, is there any one thing he can do, or is it just play ball, play hard for as long as you can, and hopefully people will come around?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of guys that do a lot of bad things, and as long as they hit 50 home runs and drive in 130 and win and hit well in the playoffs, you know, and win a World Series, look at what he did he was a hero when they won the World Series and he had a good series. He was a goat when he didn't do it. So it's what have you done for me lately? But he just seems to be the kind of person that people love to hate, you know. And I'm not sure why, because I don't spend enough time with him. I don't see him interact that much with people. But, you know, I guess, like they said yesterday, at least according to him, everybody was happy he was back in the dugout. So I don't know. It's a little bit of an enigma, to be honest with you.
Hey, Coach, it's been publicly reported that there wasn't really a central father figure in Alex's life. And at one point, you sort of fit that role. Do you think that type of missing figure in his life has kind of played into his problems over the past 20 years?
I think it plays into anybody's problem. If you don't have two parents that are there to help, you know, raise you and to be a support system for you. His mother did everything she could, obviously. But I think, you know, he idolized his dad. And when his dad took off, that was a traumatic experience for him. And that certainly can add to, you know, security problems and everything else, and abandonment and all that kind of stuff. So people are really harsh with him, but they don't know him all that well either. So, you know, people just want to throw him under the bus and have no idea. They just think, well, he's a jerk, so we're going to get rid of him. And I can't do that. You know, I don't condone anything that's done improperly. I don't condone bad behavior. If he did something wrong, he got punished. He wasn't treated any differently than any of my other players. I had four major leaguers on my 92 team, so that's how good we were, you know.
I mean, that in and of itself is amazing. And Coach, you've been great. Yeah. I really appreciate your time tonight. I know you're getting done with practice, but you know, touching on what Matt just said, one of the debates we've had on the show often is, I really think that Alex Rodriguez's biggest problem, and I could be completely wrong, and you're the right person to ask this, I think it's an insecurity problem. And I think that, you know, he's in the first pick, he's got all this pressure, and he's obviously extremely talented, but there's got to be part of him that doesn't believe in himself for him to keep doing this. And I think that, you know, all this talk around the league and all these, you know, pundits on Sports Talk Radio want to talk about his legacy, but I genuinely believe in his mind, he's thinking, this legacy would be nothing if I couldn't do this, because he needs this extra little bit, and it was more of a mental thing than the actual physical attributes that came along with the steroids. The reason I say this in part is because he keeps repeating himself, but in part because of some of what his ex-teammates say, that, you know, for a superstar, he's not the type of guy that commands the locker room. He's a little socially awkward. He doesn't really have that, like, natural, innate leadership quality to him. Doug Glanville was on ESPN talking about that just yesterday. And so I want to ask you, when you saw him in high school, you know, everybody knows, usually the big-time athletes, especially a guy like him, would be the big man on campus. Every girl in the world loves him. You know, every guy wants to hang out with him and just commands a room. Was he that type of guy? Or, like you said, I mean, you had a lot of other superstars on that high school team. Was he just the superstar that didn't necessarily become the leader of the team?
Well, I'll tell you, the nice thing about I've told a lot of people this in the last couple of days. I think the best 3 years of his life were the 3 years at Westminster, because he had a group of players around him that took care of him. He had families that took him in, and he stayed with them, ate at their houses, got rides. They took him everywhere and treated him like they were one of the family. Okay, they gave him love, really. And then, you know, the school, the program obviously gave him the discipline and the ability to develop his talents to the max because we had great players around him. So he wasn't the only guy, and they couldn't pitch around him necessarily and all that kind of stuff. So we had a great time, and then, you know, I had a chance at that point to be a bit of a mentor to him, obviously, and he looked up to me because, you know, I was probably the most male figure at that time in his life for 3 years. And then the other thing is the school gave him some structure, gave him some spiritual insight and also some academic insight, and they treated him just like anybody else, you know. So to me, Alex was just an average guy that was a great baseball player during that period of time. So I think any of these other things develop because you don't keep a real solid foundation around you of people that, one, hold you accountable, and two, you know, don't give you the love and support you need if you do have some issues, you know, with security and anything else. So I think that's really important. But, you know, you brought up an important point. It's not about Alex necessarily. It's about human nature in general. If you don't have great self-esteem, and this is one of my favorite sayings, if you don't have great self-esteem, okay, that's the biggest gift your parents can give you. It's the biggest gift that God can give you, because if you have self-esteem, it doesn't matter what happens to you, because you're always gonna be feel like you can make it, you can be solid. And the second thing is, from my standpoint, if God's in your life, then you got somebody more powerful than you to take care of you when you really need it. And, you know, those are two features that he was taught at Westminster. But if you don't continue to utilize those and develop those tendencies, then you don't make good decisions, because you don't have the solid foundation or basis on which to make good decisions.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. I mean, I always tell people, I mean, the luckiest, you know, I'm one of the luckiest guys in the world. I was born into a great family. You know, I talk to my father and my mother just about every day, and, you know, maybe that's old school Italian in me, but I'm blessed in that way. And people always want to throw stones at people, but, you know, you got to just really respect what you've been given. And so, Coach, I really appreciate your time. I know it's probably been a crazy couple of days. You know, you just got out of practice and you're over here on the phone with us. We really appreciate it up here in Connecticut. Last thing, I mean, so what are you up to now? I know you've retired, you've come out of retirement. What are you up to now? I mean, because you're getting a national stage now, and everybody knows your name, but people got to appreciate, beyond the fact that you coach Alex Rodriguez, I mean, you were one of the best high school coaches of all time. So what are you doing right now?
I'm glad you asked that, because that's what I really like to talk about. I'm starting a new school called SLAM. It's a new high school, charter high school in Miami. I'm actually going. I was in Fort Lauderdale for 15 years. I'm still going to live there, but I'm going to travel back to Miami, where I started it all in '67. And we're starting an all sports curriculum school. All the electives are sports related, instead of, you know, your crab courses and stuff like that. So, It's all the basics, you know, for your core. But we are the first school, I think, in America, at least that we know of, that is going to have all sports-related electives. And we have three different tracks. We have sports management and advertising and marketing as one career path. Then we have sports medicine and all the things that go with the medical field and stuff. And then we have sports broadcasting and all that, the journalism and everything else. And so kids are choosing a career path as early as seventh grade. So by the time they end up in high school, they will have had a vast knowledge and a tremendous four-year head start on a college degree in those areas, you know. So we're really excited about it. And we're also, it's kind of like a big game for me, because here I am almost 60, you know, I'll be 69 in a couple of days. And I'm starting over. This is my last chapter of the book. It's got about 80 chapters by now, you know. But I'm starting out, and the thing I really like is I get to work with all my former coaches are coming back to help me from Miami. And my principal is Alex Tamarga, who played for me on the same team that Alex played on. So I'm really excited about what we're doing there. And if this thing works, we're going to put 30 of these around the United States. So look for Slam. I hope in a few years we can have some national recognition as a baseball program and as a school.
Well, I'll tell you what, that is exactly the type of story that we like to talk about in the Tri-State Sports Guys. We highlight a lot of high school sports here. We've had a lot of local coaches on. And, you know, Coach, you know, you're going to be on a lot of shows. You're going to be on a lot of, blogs and different websites and newspapers and stuff. But I want to follow up with you, you know, a year from now. And after all this stuff, I want to know about the SLAM program. I want to know about this. So we're going to reach out to you and find out where that's going, because that's really what's important here. I mean, you know, I don't want everybody just to think of you as just Alex Rodriguez's coach. I want people to think of you as a guy who really – changes lives, because that's what high school sports is all about.
Well, maybe we'll put one in Connecticut.
We have a lot of charter schools. You know, I'm up in New Haven, and they had a couple charter schools up there. We got a couple in Norwalk, where I live now, and that's something that would be great.
We got something planned in New York City, I think, and Vegas, L.A., Houston, Texas. You know, we got 30 sites kind of looking at. I'm not sure where they all are yet, but this is the only thing that I would come back to. Otherwise, I'd put my feet up and kind of just keep my eye on the TV, you know, and put some time in the mountains of North Carolina. So, listen, it was great talking to you, and I appreciate you following up on it. And, the things that you're trying to do for people is for education, you know. You're trying to educate them, and you have some good insight, and I hope that I've been able to give you a little also.
Coach, you've been a great guest, and we'll definitely, you know what, I'll find some information about your program. I'll post it on our website, and, we'll follow up with you, because I want to hear from you a year from now and see how everything is going, and hopefully you do have school up in New York. It'd be great. We'd love to have you back on anytime.
Okay, call me anytime. Be glad to do it. Okay.
All right. That's Rich Hoffman. That's a great interview, Maddie. That's a great insight, because this is not a guy who's doing the talk show circuit just for the sake of, his 15 seconds of fame.
Yeah.
This guy, he's got good insight. He's willing to do it. He's not hiding from it. But he's out there. I mean, this guy was retired two different times, comes back, and he starts a charter school for kids. I mean, that's an amazing guy. And that's the type of guy that outside the line should be profiling instead of sitting there doing all the negative stuff.
Well,
that's a Bryant Gumbel on his stupid HBO show should be profiling this guy.
Well,
let's do a 30 on 30 on him.
I have to say that there was something that was very telling from what he said. And what that was, that it's not like he was proud of Alex Rodriguez and the largest contract ever, or, Yankees and World Series, Seattle. What he seemed to be most proud of was that he was a pillar of structure in this young man's life.
Yeah. And that's the type of stuff when we talk to, like, Coach Ireland in Norwalk, we've had other coaches on who's probably sleeping, but, that's the type of thing that they really talk about.
Mm-hmm.
They're not proud of their kid. I mean, Coach Ireland had a bunch of kids from his first year coaching go on to play college football. He's not proud because they're good football players.
Yeah.
He's proud because Delshawn Wilson went out and is got a 3.4 GPA at Central Connecticut.
Yeah.
That's the first thing he said to me. I said, I heard Delshawn starting next year as a sophomore. And he says, and he's got a 3.4. The first thing he said. And that's, and I can never coach high school sports.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have the patience for it. I don't like 15-year-old kids. I think they're all obnoxious. I don't have the patience for it. I thought that was fantastic. Neil, what did you think of that interview? I mean, that's insightful than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be
the best interview the Tri-State Sport guys have ever done, next to Lanny Papo.
Next to Leap and Lanny Papo. Neil, what did you think of it as you were listening to it? I'm sorry you didn't get a lot of words in edgewise.
No, I mean, I was perfectly happy listening to him, because you can understand why the guy has won in over 1,000 baseball games. You know, I've had a slew of coaches over my career, both high school and college and beyond, and, you know, I've never really clicked with a lot of them. There were only one or two that I really saw eye to eye with, which is rare. You know, and you could say I have a problem with authority, but I think with him you could tell that, you know, we tossed him some pretty hard questions, and I guarantee he's gotten a lot harder over the past week or couple of days. And he handled it with grace and aplomb. The guy has been under pressure. He makes tough decisions, and, you know, you can see why, you know, he's sent a lot of guys to the major leagues. It's because he's got discipline, and you only wonder what would happen if he was able to stay in A-Rod's life for longer. You know what I mean? If there was a guy like him on each level. And, you know, sometimes when a young guy goes to the major leagues, there isn't that person like Coach Hoffman to really not hold the player's hand, but to be that guy to lean on that is a soundboard. And maybe Alex can really get that in Seattle, and it just snowballed from there.
I agree, man. And, you know, everybody who has a strong family structure completely takes it for granted. And you think back, I don't want to sound like hokey or anything, but I think back as being like a 15 or 16-year-old kid and yelling at my mom and dad, you know, being the typical jerk, you know, teenager. And now you look back as a, you know, a 33-year-old and you say, God, look how lucky I am, because, you know, a lot of my friends didn't have that. And a lot of people in America don't have that. And you look at a guy like Alex Rodriguez, who has the world by the brajole, but doesn't, you know, but can't just, you know, he can't figure things out because he wasn't brought up with it. That's just an innate thing you have, being brought up in a family structure like that. And this guy, Rich Hoffman, provided it for him. That was just amazing. You know, we're going to try to share that as much as possible. Hopefully we'll get Tony D to cut it up and just have that. Because that should be something that should be sent around. I mean, you listen to that guy, just a genuine, salt-of-the-earth type guy. I'm sure he had plenty of opportunities to go on and coach anywhere he wanted to.
Sure.
And he stuck around in high school. And it was important to him to win state championship more so than go coach at some Division I school somewhere.
Well, here's a question I think that I'm dying to hear what Neil's going to say on this. And while Neil is giving his answer, I want, you know, obviously you to think of it. And, you know, listen, this is the only time I'm going to say this on it, but you mentioned, you know, having a strong family structure. Your father is going to be so proud of you by your interview today with him. That was really incredible. So that's the first thing. But what I wanted to ask Neil and I wanted to ask you, has your opinion of A-Rod changed after listening to that interview?
You get to know him a little bit better. You know his back history a little bit better. And, I feel sorry for him. But then again, I've felt sorry for him for a while now. I just feel sorrier for him because, you know, here's a guy who, you know, I don't think there was any question that his love for baseball and his respect for the game, but also, you know, it's that lack of guidance that has steered him in this direction that makes him think that he's untouchable or invincible. And, you know, I still will use the word delusional when describing Alex Rodriguez. But, you know, it's important to understand that the guy is human and that he came from a certain background. And, you know, no offense to Mr. Hoffman, but he did make a point that, okay, Alex is so poor he couldn't buy the drugs. Guess what? There are more than a handful of people out in this world who will. It's called being a drug dealer. You give someone a free sample and you say, "Don't forget about me. You owe me one." So, I mean, I'm not completely ruling out that the kid did not do steroids in high school, because I feel like anyone who saw his talent would have been like, "You know what? All you need to do is pack on 30 pounds so you can hit home runs and not these doubles. Here's a free sample. Get me back when you're rich and famous."
See, I think, Neil, I think his answer to that was spot on, though. You think all these drug dealers in Miami, Florida, are keeping their mouths shut right now? How much money is he paying a random drug dealer from high school to keep his mouth shut? Because if they're still alive, the steroid dealers from the early 90s down in Miami, Florida, somebody who knows that would be talking, and I think he's exactly right. And I actually, I mean, to answer Matt's question, my opinion of him hasn't really changed, because that's kind of been, you know, he almost – reiterated my point. He's not to make him a sympathetic figure, but this guy, you know, the fact that his three high school years were the best years of his career, we all know those guys who
high school was the pinnacle of their life. We know them. You know them, Neil, Matt. You know the guys in high school who were Joe Jock in high school, and never. And then now they're, you know, they're sitting there, you know, down on their luck. And the only difference is Alex Rodriguez was able to make a lot of money, but he was never able to regain that bit of glory. And there's nothing like that. You know, he goes into a minor league locker room, and now he's not a friend that you've grown up with that you know where they live. It is, you know, oh, you're the bonus baby. You're the number one pick. And he's not getting that, and that's why he did all these things. What I liked the most about that interview, though, was him just coming straight out and calling
Selena Roberts a fraud.
That was the best part of this interview,
yeah.
Because I remember thinking, this lady's a sneaky, just a snake of a lady.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we're now, you know, we're just do this for fun. But as we grow as a show, you know, I always say to myself, I'm never going to be that type of person.
Yeah.
It's never going to be worth it. It's not my personality to be a snaky type person. And if that's what it's going to take to make it, then we'll just keep doing it out of, you know, we'll keep it local. I don't care because I could never be that kind of person. And I remember reading the article on Sports Illustrated, you know, the excerpt and all that from Selena Roberts. And I remember thinking, this girl is a sneak, like, just trying not to make a buck and like a gotcha type person and might as well be Mari Povich. And I'm like, you know what? That's
well,
what
you
got from it.
You could have done that with this guy. You know,
yeah.
You could have been that snake in the grass.
Because Doctor would
you
make it if
you
wanted.
You could have. Well, they couldn't do a nickname.
We could have sat there and just hammered on the breakup of the band.
Yeah,
but that's not that.
But what I'm saying with this guy, I mean, this guy was a little bit more less worldly than Nick Mason.
Yeah.
Now you could never have done that with the genius because the genius is smarter than you. You know.
He would have found. Yeah, he would have. And he would have found my address.
Yeah, he would have given you one of those elbow drops from the top rope. But what I'm saying is that this guy came onto this program with the trust that this wasn't going to be a lowbrow interview, and based on his reaction to a lot of the questions, like, that's a great question, I appreciate you asking that, which was a thing that he said, and he also broke down your questions into parts, and he says, okay, let me answer the first part here, so I think that he really did appreciate that. So basically what I'm saying is that when you say that you're not going to go to that lowbrow journalism, yeah, you kind of proved it in this interview.
Yeah, I think we tried to keep it, you know, if I were to meet this guy, this is how I would talk to him face-to-face, and I think Neil did the same thing, and you did the same thing, and I could never get to that point. Hopefully we never do. Now, we are in bonus time. We're going to get to a quick top 10, Neil. We got a good top 10, so I don't want to avoid it. We don't have much time, so we're going to go quickly through it. We are in the midst of football season, the Hall of Fame game with Sunday night, which I watched a very brief part of it, only because I was very frustrated with Shark Week. So what we decided to do was top 10 storylines to follow in the NFL preseason. These are reasons to watch preseason games. Now, preseason football is a lot different than preseason baseball, and especially preseason basketball, where you're just dying to watch football, so you're going to watch it. So, Neil, I'm going to roll through my top 10 real quick. Maybe we have some overlap. I'm sure we do. I didn't go in any real particular order, but here we go. Number one, I want to see how Chip Kelly's offense is going to work at the NFL level. I think you're going to get a glimpse of it. I know, you know, you're not looking at scores or even stats and stuff in the preseason, but you want to see if this up-tempo offense is going to work, and I want to see if he's actually going to run that up-tempo offense. I want to see if he's changing up what he, you know, what he did at Oregon, and if he's just going to, you know, kind of tweak it a little bit and make it NFL ready, and see really what type of coaches. We've already critiqued the fact that how he's handling, you know, camp, and he's not making people tackle and all that. The second one, I'm curious to see how the Saints are going to do with Sean Payton back. I think that you saw last year the impact that a good coach has, and we've had this debate when O was on the show before Neil joined us about the, you know, who the most impactful head coach is in all the sports, and I said it was football by far, and I agree with that. I mean, I'm going to reiterate that. I think you get a guy. I think even Sean Payton, with all their problems last year, if Sean Payton's the coach of the Saints, with all the, you know, problems they were having, they're going to make the playoffs and make a run there. And I think that there's going to be a big impact. So I think you could see that game one. I think that the Saints want to make a statement early on and that they're back. And I think it's going to be a thing of Sean Payton. Another one, you talk about a coach making an impact. I'm curious to see about Andy Reid out in Kansas City. Now, Kansas City is a proud football city, one of the toughest places to go in and play at Arrowhead. And so, you know, they're doing some things. You know, they got Alex Smith. They have a good running game. They have a good young defense. I mean, they were a team last year that have a good record, but were in a lot of games. I think that everybody is like, okay, you know, Denver's going to go out and run away with this division, which is probably true. But I want to see, can Andy Reid, and I think it's a big thing for Andy Reid because he's known as a great coach, but that could never win the big game. But can he be a Bill Parcells type and turn around another franchise? I think he can. I mean, I can't say enough about Andy Reid. I think it's going to be great. The next one, the Cowboys switched to the 4-3 defense. I only say this because after watching that, I was worried about that. You're worried about DeMarcus Ware. You know, one of the best pass rushers really in the history of the game that doesn't get that kind of respect. I mean, the sack numbers he's put up to this point in his career are really unprecedented. They're LT-type numbers. And so I want to see if he's able to put his hand on the ground and still get to the quarterback, whether that's going to be a difference maker for the Cowboys because, you know, they're gonna score points. Whatever you want to say about Tony Romo, he puts points on the board. Whether he chokes in different moments, that's one thing. But he's going to put points on the board. So is a 4-3 defense going to be the difference maker for the Cowboys? We'll get into our picks later on, but I really like the Cowboys next year. Next, we got to get into the Pats. You know, there's a lot going on in their camp, but the most interesting thing to follow with the Pats is obviously Tim Tebow and the use of Tim Tebow. I was not as interested last preseason because, you know, the Jets were all, it was all under a cloud of secrecy. I was against the move, and, you know, and deep down I was hoping they would cut him. The Patriots are a different ballgame because they have proven everyone wrong when they go out and draft two tight ends early in a draft and then make it the most dynamic offense in the world. That type of thing. So I'm interested to see how the Pats utilize Tim Tebow. I think that's going to be something to watch. The next one, and we talked off air, Maddie, you didn't think this was interesting, but I'm interested in the Honey Badger getting drafted by Arizona. You know, I'm always interested in the guy, and, you know, Randy Moss is a different extent, but Randy Moss is a guy who drafted way in the draft. I think he went 19th overall when he went to the Vikings because he had off-the-field issues and everybody was worried about him. Honey Badger was a first-round talent, according to everyone that's supposedly an expert, whether it's McShay or Kuiper and everything. He fell to the third round, still went a little bit higher than people were projecting, but he went in the third round of Arizona. I want to see if this guy – I was always skeptical whether he was a first-round talent because the little guy, playmaker, could make turnovers, but is that something – I mean, can he be a Tillman-type D-back? I don't know. I'm interested to see if Honey Badger – is somebody who immediately you see and he jumps off the screen in the preseason. I want to see that. Or is he just lost in the mix at the NFL level? I have the opinion that he's probably going to be lost in the mix, but I'll be curious about that. Another storyline, off-the-field type stuff, is Manti Te'o. I'm interested to see how his what the reaction to other fans are, what his fans are, what other fans are like when Manti Te'o comes out. And I want to see legitimately, and I always had a fear even as a Notre Dame fan, whether he could succeed at the NFL level. He's not extremely fast. He's not extremely big. He seemed to always be in the right spot at the right time, which is, you know, something to be there's something to be said about that. But also, you know, his interception numbers seem to be a little inflated. There are a lot of batted balls. He happened to be standing there. I want to see if Manti Te'o is an NFL linebacker. As above all of the how are the fans going to receive him, I want to see if this guy going to be legit and did they get a feel there out west when they drafted him? Or was that something that I'm glad the Giants, the Jets didn't do? RG3 is a storyline I'm interested in. He's ahead of schedule. He's doing 7-on-7 drills now. They're talking about getting him in pads and doing full 11-on-11 drills next week. When the injury happened, there was nobody in the world that thought this guy was going to be ready for game one, although the Washington Redskins camp was saying they would be. I didn't think so. There's a chance this guy's going to be ready week one, Maddie. And I think if I was a Giants fan, I'd be very scared of that. Obviously, the next one, Riley Cooper. What happens with him? I mean, he's coming back to camp. He's going to be, you know, he's going to be playing in the preseason. I mean, above all the off-the-field stuff, I mean, the Eagles, with Macklin injury, I mean, they really need something out of this guy. Mm-hmm. They can't replace a number two. I mean, he's a number two wide receiver.
Yeah.
So is he going to be a complete head case? All signals point to, yeah, he's going to be, at this point, he's a complete head case. So he's gone, and then obviously number one, I'm not getting into the detail of it, but the Jets quarterback battle, Sanchez, Friday night's going to be starting. I still maintain that Jets fans should want Mark Sanchez to start the season because it can only go up from there.
Yeah.
If you start with Geno Smith at game one, and maybe he takes the ground running. I just think that's, out of the three scenarios, I don't think that's the most I mean, I don't think the Jets are poised to win.
Yep.
I think that you start Mark Sanchez, maybe you get something out of him. If you don't get something out of him and you're having a bad season, you inject Geno Smith, and then it becomes something like the Mets fans are going through right now,
yep.
like something to look forward to in the future. Now, Neil, what do you got for your top 10 storylines to follow? We got about 10 minutes left.
The Smith-Sanchez saga is definitely top of the list. You know, you have anonymous guys that are at camp saying that Smith is the clear-cut starter. There was apparently a goof-up, or maybe it was not, where Smith and Sanchez are both listed as the number one on the depth chart. To me, I think Smith starts week one. And if he doesn't start week one, he shares a significant load of the snaps. I'm talking about 50-50. With Sanchez, because, I mean, it has not looked good for Mark in a long time. And I think with the arrival of Geno, who kind of has that cocky attitude, brings a certain swagger to the position that Sanchez is going to – he's going to get inside his own head, and he's going to – I don't think he's going to rise to the occasion. Another storyline I was thinking about, you touched upon the coaches in New Orleans, Sean Payton returning, and then Bruce Arians going to Arizona and leaving the vacancy in Indianapolis that Chuck Strong – is now taking back. We're going to see, was Bruce Arians really the reason why the Colts succeeded? And, you know, is that going to carry over to the Cardinals? Tough, because I don't know that the Cardinals have the same kind of personnel that the Colts do. But you see also with Rob Ryan going from Dallas to New Orleans, how much of an effect is Rob Ryan going to be? Are we going to see that Rob Ryan really is a fraud and that he should never have gotten the respect that he initially did when he first went to Dallas? I'm also keeping an eye on the Pittsburgh Steelers. This is a situation where they've been on top of the world for the past several years. They made the playoffs again this year, but they're looking very vulnerable. They've lost a lot of talent. They have a lot of aging veterans. They lost one of their speedsters, Mike Wallace, to the Dolphins. They have a running back situation that they have to address. Ben Roethlisberger is a zombie at this point. So are they going to be able to continue their success? I feel like this is the year where you start to see them crumble, and we start to see someone else take control of the AFC North. Baltimore, obviously the perfect favorite, but is this a chance for the Bengals to come up and step up and be the contenders that they all think they are? With the Giants, it's a question of defense. You know, defense has been up and down, inconsistent over the past couple of years. Even in their championship runs, the regular season they look one way, and then they're amazing in the playoffs. Is this an opportunity with Terrell Thomas coming back into the lineup and with the signing of Dan Connor, some shuffling, some pickups on the defensive line, getting Aaron Ross back, even though, you know, many people think that that's not that great an acquisition. I think it's great insurance for the secondary. You know, is this an opportunity for the Giants defense to step up and really prove themselves? Because the offense, despite their hits and misses last year, that they're the strongest unit. And so it's time for the defense to step up. So I'm curious to see how they'll respond. On the flip side of things, New England, you touched upon it. How is Tim Tebow going to fit into the scheme? Wasn't really a question when they first signed him. I mean, it was a question, it was the top question, how they're going to use him. But now it's even more important knowing that Gronk is going to be out again for a longer period of time and with the Aaron Hernandez debacle. So, Is this the end of the New England Patriots as an offensive juggernaut? Is this a situation where Tom Brady proves he's a legend again and can pull a rabbit out of a hat and just work with just about anyone, anywhere? I'm also really interested to see how the San Francisco 49ers Seattle Seahawks rivalry turns out. I think this is the series to watch in the NFL right now. They played amazing games last year. And I only think it's going to get better this year, the way that these teams have made moves in the offseason. Understandably, Percy Harvin is out, but I really don't think that hurts the Seahawks as much as everyone thinks. I think you're going to see classics every time they take the field against each other. And then, you know, the Falcons. I've been pooping on the Falcons for years now, and I think that it's absurd that Ron Jaworski rates Matty Ice over Elijah. I think that's absurd that would happen. And the fact that Matty Ice gets this humongous contract extension, it's like, win a couple playoff games, make me believe in you, because at this point, I don't know. And, you know, the fact that they picked up Steven Jackson, you know, I want to see if they're for real this year, because, you know, in my mind, they could put up a, you know, 15-1 season, 15-0 regular season. They're going to lose in the playoffs. That's just a fact. Chicago Bears, Jay Cutler. Can he take his game to the next level? I think we've been waiting on Jay to be the guy that everyone can depend on, that can come back and be clutch, make absurd throws. Can he take that next step and be a Tom Brady-type player, where he doesn't need a tremendous supporting cast, that he can put it on his shoulders and make some plays and not blame his offensive line and not get hurt and really suck it up and be the kind of player that Chicago hopes that he can be? You touched on it. I just need to touch on some more. Riley Cooper. You know, that is humongous, especially with what you said with Macklin going down. But it's more than that. It's the fact that you have LeSean McCoy coming out now, quoting and saying, I can't forgive this guy. I can't get over the fact that he said this. There's going to be some lasting effects from his video. The fact that he didn't tell anyone or on the team or anyone in the organization that happened. Even after he got the numerous tweets from the video, the owner of the video. Now, I know people get spam all the time, and I know that crazy people are out there claiming stuff, but for you not even to address it or tell anyone on the team, in the organization, your lawyer, whatever, that's, and now you have players in your team who can't trust you. That's going to have a lasting effect. And so, and tangential to that, Chip Kelly. You can talk about his fast-paced offense all you want, but he's got to deal more with the locker room at this point. He's got to deal with team chemistry. And the fact that you have a guy that dropped this word, this phrase, and has this mentality despite the rehab that he's going through, and you have these other players, you know, Mike Vick has forgiven him, but look what Mike Vick's done. He's killed dogs. You know, you need to get the other people on board, like LeSean McCoy. And then last but not least, the defending Super Bowl champions, Joe Flacco. Is he elite? He doesn't have Anquan Boldin to bail him out of third down situations. He doesn't have Dennis Pettis in the red zone. Were those two tools really what made Joe Flacco elite, or is Joe Flacco what makes Joe Flacco elite? That's my 10.
Yeah, I like your last one there. It was my my bubble one that I want to talk about, because that's going to be a very interesting storyline. Is I've been a big Joe Flacco fan. I've said he is like the mirror image of Eli, where he puts up bad games and then puts up great games. He's shown that in the playoffs he could win games. He leads his team to the playoffs. That's going to be a very interesting thing. We are out of time, like literally out of bonus time right now. Thank you, Neil. This has been a very good show. Thank you, Maddie, for landing that guest.
Yep.
Rich Hoffman, thank you again for joining the show. This was great. Thank you, Lene Kakua, who was on and gave her input.
Neil, that Seattle 49ers thing that you said was probably the most telling thing tonight. That was you're absolutely right about that. That's going to be an exciting, exciting series. And I'll tell you right now that they bring out the best in each other. So I just want to applaud you for saying that.
Yeah, a lot of storylines going on there, a lot of rivalries, coaches and players and all that. So it's great. But we're the Tri-State Sports Guys. Check us out every week, Wednesday nights, 8 to 9:30 or 10, whatever time we go to. TriStateSportsGuys.com, Facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys, or @TriState_sports. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. We will see you next week. I doubt we're going to have the type of guests we had this week, but this was a great show. Thank you, Maddie. Thank you, Neil. We'll see you next week.
Adios.